Morning. Can I okay on the mic? Good. Okay. So, happy Veterans Day to all of our veterans. That's a holiday we observe here in America, and thank you for your service. This morning, I have a chance once again to share some things I've studied with you, and I appreciate that opportunity. As for those of you that are visiting, our preacher is off visiting elsewhere. I think he's in Oregon doing something there. And so I'll do my best to bring you something worthwhile. But if you want a really good lesson, come back next Sunday and you'll get something better. That said, I've been going through Hebrews. And that's the last several lessons that we've had together when I've had an opportunity to speak. So again, no surprise, we're going to spend some time with Hebrews. So you've walked through Hebrews with me if you've been here, and we're up to chapter 12 right now. So specifically, we're going to talk about just three verses. So hopefully, my wife was like, you know, she's looking at my materials like, you might run short there, might not be long enough, so hopefully I'll get you out of here in a really good clip. But I think I can talk long enough to, you know, give you a good lesson here, at least share my thoughts with you. We're going to spend our time specifically dissecting verses 1 to 3. So let's jump right on into that and read those. So if you have your Bibles available or your iPhones or tablets, whatever it is you use, go ahead and open those up. Open to Hebrews 12, 1 to 3. So therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. So it's interesting that the author would choose a metaphor of a race, a long-distance race, to illustrate and compare and contrast against the Christian life. Now, the Greek word for race is agonos. Probably not saying it right. I'm not a Greek expert. But as I prepared for this, I came across that. And agonos is a root word for agony in our language today. So we think of agony. That race is agony. That seems a fitting comparison of what characterizes a long-distance race also characterizes the Christian life. If you've ever run a long-distance race, you know that it's not easy. From the top of your head to the soles of your feet, it hurts. And at some point, you feel like giving up. But if you want to finish, you just keep pressing forward. The long-distance race is a struggle, and living the Christian life can be as well. It's not easy, or it's not always easy, to live for Christ and run that race that has been set before us. It is and can be a struggle, and there will be pain along the way, but there's joy and victory for those who endure. There's some common characteristics of a race. So every race has a starting line and a finish line and is characterized by progress. The runners start at the starting line, and they make progress towards the finish line. If you run the wrong way, you'll be disqualified. But if you run in the right direction, you'll progress towards the finish line. One of the key words that describes the Christian life is the word progress. So I would propose to you today that the question in your life is one of progression and not perfection. Are you, look at yourself, look in the mirror, are you as a Christian making progress spiritually? Are you further down the road spiritually today than you were last month? Last year? 3 years ago? The issue is not perfection. None of us are perfect. That's been made perfectly clear We couldn't do that. Christ had to give himself for us. The issue is about progression. Are you progressing spiritually? Do you have your eyes on the goal? Do you have your eyes on Christ? So an interesting story I ran across that I think portrays so well running in the wrong direction. So, and this goes back, I think the football fans here will probably appreciate this comparison here. On January 1st, 1929, the Golden Bears faced the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. Midway through the second quarter, a guy named Roy Riegels, who played center on both offense and defensive lines, and who was then playing in a role similar to that of the modern-day defensive nose guard or nose tackle, he picked up a fumble. He was just 30 yards away from the Yellow Jackets' end zone. All he had to do was move that ball 30 yards towards the end zone. Somehow, in the mix of all the chaos, the hits, he gets turned around, and he runs 69 yards in the opposite direction towards his own goal line. He was tackled by his own teammates at the one-yard line. That's okay. It's good. I hope that we would do that for each other. You know, really, you think about that. He's running hard the other way, and this guy was giving it his all. He was an All-American. He was a good player. I think he had a free ride scholarship. I mean, he was that good. So they tackle him there, I think at the one-yard line, I think is what the story says. And here's a quote from him. I was running toward the sidelines when I picked up the ball. This is what he told the Associated Press. I started to turn to my left toward Tech's goal. Somebody shoved me, and I bounced right off into a tackler. In pivoting to get away from him, I completely lost my bearings. Roy Riegels. He was so devastated at halftime that he didn't want to come back out on the field. His coach talked him out of that. Got to get back in there, get back in the game, Roy. We all make mistakes. It's okay. But his heart was in the right place, right? He wasn't running those 69 yards thinking he was doing anything wrong. He was trying to win the game. So what I say to each one of us, look at yourself. Are you running in the wrong direction? Is God looking down and shaking his head and saying, oh, there goes, fill in your name, running in the wrong direction? He wants each one of us to be running in the right direction. He wants us to run towards him. That's what we need to keep in mind. So the author of Hebrews talks to us about the race that we are to run, the Christian marathon. And for those of you that know me, I like to run. So this was when I came across this point and was studying this, I was like, yeah, that's very fitting. Like I can relate to that. So I like to run. I do running events. I do the marathons. I do those different things. So like it was very relevant to me. And it's a good choice of words because it talks about the agony of the run, as we talked about with the Greek, agonis. So a run, you know, it can be hard, it can be difficult, and so can our race. So as you read through verses 1-3, there's one primary theme that I believe resonates throughout the three verses. And specifically within verse 1, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. So many times I saw endurance as I studied and prepared was interpreted or translated as patience. So I don't think patience is the right word. So they're very different. So patience is stepping back, taking a deep breath. You know, when you want to grind those gears and just jam it into third gear, you know, that's, you got to step back and just let it idle. That's patience. But endurance is you put it in four-wheel drive low, put your head down, and you just go. Despite all the cost, all the weight, all the adversity, whatever it takes, you will endure to get to the prize. So that's my spin on endurance versus patience. So I don't know if your Bible will interpret it as patience, what you have, but I did find a lot of folks talking about it as patience versus endurance. I believe endurance is a more fitting word. So everything within these three verses connects back to let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. So everything before and after that statement supports how we are to go about running that race, running our Christian marathon. So let's take a look at verse 1 together. So therefore, we also, emphasis, therefore, we are anchoring, the author is anchoring chapter 12 with chapter 11. We just came off of chapter 11. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us all, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. So the therefore, I believe, is so very important for you to take in the context as you're transitioning from 11, because therefore, this great cloud of witnesses, who are those cloud of witnesses? So you have to go back to chapter 11. So, and if you have your Bibles available, flip back to chapter 11. And you'll see, starting in verse 1. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good testimony. And then the author walks us through the hall of fame, or the hall of faith. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice. By faith, Enoch was taken away, so that he did not see death. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out to the place. By faith, Sarah herself. Again, by faith, Abraham. By faith, Isaac. By faith, Jacob. By faith, Joseph. On and on, the author goes. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell. And by faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish. Chapter 11, the therefore anchors you 12 to 11. So you have to take that into context and step back and read it. Because when you get down to the end of chapter 11, and all these having obtained a good testimony through faith, there's your cloud of witnesses. The author of Hebrews gave us a hall of faith to read through in chapter 11. So those are your cloud of witnesses. Those are the faithful men and women. Those are the people that provide us with a testimony that the only way to live for Christ is by faith, and that we must run that race with endurance. You have to anchor them together and bring the whole context of 11 into 12. That's the importance of the therefore in that transition. And in the Greek, that's a very powerful word that's used for that therefore transition. Again, I'm not a Greek scholar, so I'm not even going to pretend to be, but everything I came across pointed to that the word that's used for the therefore in the Greek is only used very sparingly, and it's a very powerful word. So the author is making a point. You have to pay attention. Pay attention to this, therefore. And then moving on, we must also lay aside every weight that might encumber us from running the race successfully. So when you look at Colossians 3:8, if you flip over to there, but now you yourselves are to put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. So let's look at that word weight. That's what we're talking about here. What is the weight that you are carrying around with you? Why do you want to carry that weight around with you? It's going to make running that race that much more difficult. So, as an infantry soldier, when we were in garrison, we'd have regular tactical 12-mile foot marches to ensure we maintained our combat readiness. We'd have to carry a full combat load. Your minimum rucksack weight was 35 pounds, and I can tell you the sergeants always added a few more when they inspected your rucks. And then you had to carry your gear, your TO&E, so whatever you were assigned. So if you were a machine gunner, you were carrying that M60 and all the ammunition. So if you were lucky, you were a radio transmitter. So you're just carrying the radio. It's a little bit lighter. But you have that whip on yourself there, and then therefore you're a target because you're the communication piece and the enemy can see that. So pro and a con. But it was heavy. And you had to advance 12 miles through the course that they established. And they always tried to find as many hills as they could. That was how we would do it. And you had 3 hours to do it. So 3 hours with a full combat load, which was typically between 50 and 100 pounds, depending on what you're carrying. So, and that was important, right? We had to do that. We had to be able to carry a load in high stress times in order to operate effectively as an infantry soldier in combat conditions. So that was what we had to do. We had to carry that load. We had no choice. But that's not true with the weight that we carry with ourselves and our Christian race. We get to pick it. We get to choose it. Whatever bad or questionable habits that we have, and each one of us do, whatever sin is in your life, you can choose to lay it down. You can choose to set it aside, and you can choose to run with endurance. You don't have to carry that weight. You don't have to do it, but it's your choice. No one's going to take that weight off of your shoulder for you. Now, hopefully, we all care enough about each other that if we see it, we're going to talk to you about it and try to knock that weight off your shoulders. But at the end of the day, regardless of our best efforts, you have to choose. Because if you choose to keep that weight and keep carrying it, you have nobody to blame but yourself. You just got to look in the mirror and say, it's all on me. So, and then notice that as you read through this, and the sin which so easily ensnares us. Notice that that's singular as you look at it. As you consider the context of Hebrews, and Hebrews is a book about living the faithful life and pressing on to perfection. So I believe that the author is referring to the sin of a lack of faith. That is the sin which can so easily ensnare us. It can capture us. It can entangle us. It can mislead us. It can entrap us. That sin of a lack of faith. The Christian life begins by faith, but that's not where it ends. Faith is a vital part every day of our Christian lives. You must be vigilant about your faith. We must live. We must run. We must conduct ourselves by faith. As you look at and let us run with endurance, there's another interesting piece of the Greek that you want to think about here. So in the Greek, it reads differently. Greek puts endurance first. So that it would read more something like this. And with endurance, let us run the race that has been set before us. So the author is emphasizing endurance. In our translation, that word got moved. Maybe it lost a little bit of its emphasis. But in the Greek is pointing out endurance. That's the key theme. We must not drift spiritually. Let us run the race that is set before us. When you are tired, you're going to think about quitting. You can't run the long distance race without endurance, and you're not going to run the long distance race without being tired. It's going to happen. It's just natural. Even if you've trained for it, you're in good shape, good condition, things are feeling good, at some point you get tired. It's a long time. So a friend of mine, we were running an ultra down in Florida a handful of years back. And the finish line at all these races, your start and your finishes tend to be at the same spots. We all start the same places. We all finish at the same places. It becomes the route you run, which is where they'll distinguish the different mileage. So we had signed up for the ultra. So we were really stupid. We said 26.2 miles isn't far enough. We're going to go further than that. So we're running, and we're coming around to the finish line at 26.2. So all the people at 26.2 get to make a right turn, and they get to go to that finish line. It's the one we're all aspiring to. It's the same finish line I'm going to run across if I keep going the other direction and following my route. My buddy decides he's had it. He makes that right turn. He goes across that finish line. He ran 26.2 miles. That's pretty cool, right? That's still pretty far. I think it is. But you know what you get in that race? Because he signed up for the ultra, he got a does not qualify. We call it a DNQ. I put my head down and just kept going. I was tired. I so much wanted to make that right turn with him and just call it a day. Still pretty far. Still a long run. Still quite an achievement. I kept running. And then I was all by myself. That was a scary part. I was out on a course in the Florida. They call it the woods, but we wouldn't even think of it as woods here. So nobody else around. I'm just running. I was like, man, I sure hope I'm on the right course. So eventually, about 3 or 4 miles later, I stumbled across another runner. So I was like, okay, we're in this together. If we're lost, we're lost together. But that's the point. You're going to get tired. You're going to think about giving up. But if you want to finish the race, you got to keep moving forward. You got to put it in low gear, and you got to keep pressing towards that finish line. That's true for being a faithful Christian. We must keep on keeping on, no matter what, despite the burdens, and there's going to be some. Now, let's be honest, you know, God counsels us against all the stupid decisions that we make, but we make them anyway. I've been very guilty of that. But I can honestly reflect back and go, I had the owner's manual, I had an out. I just was dumb enough not to read it. But that's where we'll find ourselves. But we got to keep on going. We must keep on progressing. We don't know how long we're going to be running our race. We have no idea when our time is going to come. However, while running, we must run with endurance. So when stealing second base in a baseball game, speed's important. So for my baseball people, there's a baseball analogy for you. So speed's important when you're stealing second base. You got to have that speed. But in a marathon, endurance is more important than speed. You got to make it for the long haul. So I'll have, you know, folks know that I like to run, and I'm not going to profess to be the best runner. I have so many injuries now that I'm surprised I still run. As a matter of fact, my doctor shakes his head when I tell him. He says, "You still running?" I just saw him the other day because my shoulder was bugging me. "Still running?" Yeah. I was like, okay. So he's like, "All the yeah." It's like, you're a testament, the perseverance. But the point being, when people ask me about running and running long distance in particular, there's a few things that I'll always tell them, and it's pretty consistent. You know, one is you got to have a training plan, whatever that is. And everyone will have their own training plan. You got to find what works well for you. There's a lot of stuff that's published out there, and, you know, that's where you're going to start if you don't have your own plan. But you got to modify it and do what works well for you, and you're going to listen to your body. Your body's going to talk to you, and it's going to tell you when it's too much or you can do more. But just be sure to listen to yourself and don't overdo it. But then probably the biggest things that they want to know is about race day. So what's the most important stuff on race day? And I'll always tell them, race day is, you got to think about this. There's a thing called the pack mentality. Everyone's going to go out really fast. They line up. If you've ever watched a race or been to a race, they line up and they go out really fast. Because usually the really fast people are up front. So that's their goal, is to go out fast and to maintain that. But you got to remember to run your own race. Tell them all that. Don't follow the pack. Run your own race. Know what works for you. Run the pace that works for you. And then I also tell them, make sure you stop at every hydration station. Walk through it. And this is for the novice, right? This is someone's never done it. It's like, walk through it, get a drink. Grab something to eat. You're not going to save that much time by trying to run through it. But what you are going to do if you don't stop and hydrate a little bit and get a little bit of nourishment is you're going to fade out and you're not going to make it all the way through. So you have to do those things. And then I also remind them, just have fun. Enjoy the race. And I think we need to do that in our Christian lives. Enjoy the race. Remember to stop at the aid stations. So it's right here. That's your aid station. Remember to run your race and enjoy yourself while you're doing it. Run your race with endurance. That was just verse one. So we still got two more to go. I think I can make it. So looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. So no one runs a race without looking across the finish line. We need to run our race, the Christian marathon, keeping our eyes focused on Jesus. You have to keep your eyes focused. He is the author and the finisher of our faith. So when you read that, and I've read this verse probably many times over the years, but as I spent more time with it, it really struck me. It's like, take note of this within the context here of the verse. So he'll be there at the start. He'll be there along the way. And Jesus will be there at the finish line. Jesus is where you need to find your strength and your encouragement. You can't get it in this world. If you're looking for strength and encouragement in this world, you're looking in the wrong place. You're not going to get it. If you want to be disappointed, discouraged, unsettled, uncertain, full of anxiety, then focus on things of this world. Focus on the people of this world. You'll get all that. But if you want to be successful in running your Christian marathon, then your eyes, your gaze must be fixed on Jesus. It's that simple. That's where you'll find your strength. That's where you'll find your encouragement. And then as you progress through this verse, so who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. What an interesting word choice, joy. Think about that. So I don't know how it struck you, but I'm going to tell you how it struck me. When I first read through this, I paused at the word joy. Who for the joy that was set before him? Joy, what is the author, crazy? What joy is there? Jesus came to this earth, lived a perfect life, was ridiculed, mocked, sacrificed on the cross, and died. Who feels like that's joyful? I didn't. I read it and I was like, wow, what is that? Why joy? Well, then I studied on it more. And here's the conclusion that I came to. Jesus was happy or joyful that he had the chance to sacrifice himself for each one of us so that we could be with him in heaven one day. Philippians 2:8, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death. This was his joy. His joy was to give his life for each one of us. He endured. He paid the price, and now he is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Psalms 110:1, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool. That was his joy. He set the example. He did what none of us could do. And now he challenges us to run the race with endurance, fixing our eyes on him. So let's move on to verse 3. So for consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. So let's step back. For consider him who endured. There's that word again. Endure. This has occurred in each one of these verses. This is the primary focus of the author. The author is talking to us about endurance. Now, as you continue to read, here comes the purpose. Lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. When you are running that marathon, you will become physically weary along the way. The same thing can happen in our spiritual race. You can become spiritually tired and weary. There will be the temptation to quit. You know what? Let somebody else run that race. Let somebody else lead those songs. Let someone else give a lesson. Let someone else clean the building. Let someone else teach the children's class. You fill in the blanks. But it will happen along the way. The challenge is to let us run with endurance so that we do not grow weary and become discouraged. So another sports analogy for you guys today. So we're going to bring this home here. In 1983, Cliff Young lined up to run the Westfield Ultramarathon in Australia. So this was the inaugural Westfield Ultramarathon. I think it's called Westfield Ultramarathon. This is a 543.7-mile run between Sydney and Melbourne. You guys hear me? I was just talking about 26 miles. So this guy was lining up to run almost 544 miles. And what's even crazier is, like, he wasn't the only guy there. A whole bunch of people there. Well, the significance here is Cliff Young, he was a 61-year-old potato farmer and sheep herder. He showed up in his overalls and his work boots, without his dentures. He later claimed that when they asked him why, he said his dentures rattled when he ran. So he didn't like it. So he didn't wear them. All the other runners, let me step back too, and he had two people on his support team. You know, to run that great of a distance, you have to have a support team. So you have to have people that are there for you along the way, change your socks, change your shoes, feed you, you know, tend to your injuries, whatever it is. You get a blister, cut the blister, wrap your foot. Like, you got to have a support team. So here's this 61-year-old potato farmer and sheep herder, and he has just a couple of guys and a van. All the other runners, they're professional athletes. So they have corporate sponsorships and highly skilled support teams. No one took Cliff seriously. Matter of fact, they were worried about him. So when the runners began began the race, they took off at a fast pace. They had good form. They were running. Everyone's like, wow, look at these guys go, right? And then here comes Cliff. He takes off at a very loping, sort of clumsy-looking, slow pace. At the end of the first day, he trailed the pack by a very large margin. the race committee was seriously worried about Cliff and his ability to finish the race. They're worried about him hurting himself too, right? Like, this guy's going to kill himself. Conventional wisdom of that time dictated that runners would run about 18 hours a day and rest for six. So, but not Cliff. He just kept running. So when they were all snoozing the evening of day one, Cliff just kept going. He ran continuously for 5 days, taking the lead after the first night and eventually winning the race with a time of 5 days, 15 hours, and 4 minutes. He ran 544 miles in just a little over 5.5 days. Isn't that crazy? He beat the previous record by 2 days. And not only did he win that race, he was 10 hours ahead of the next closest competitor. So all of those professional athletes with their corporate sponsorships and their highly skilled support teams, he crushed them. A 61-year-old guy. And here's the kicker. The award, the prize, he didn't realize there was a prize. And that's what he said. It was $10,000 Australian dollars. That's back in 1983. In today's dollars, that would be $27,000 Australian dollars, or about $18,500 U.S. dollars. 544 miles, and that's all you get? Wow. No way. You know, just, I guess, for him, the thrill of the challenge. But what he did is he took that pot, and he split it up against the other five runners that finished. He gave it all to them. He didn't even want the money. I don't know if that was magnanimous of him or just stupid. I mean, but he's like, I didn't even realize there was a prize. I was just doing it. I wanted to do it. You know, and then they go on to study Cliff's peculiar running style, and they found it to be a very efficient running technique for long-distance ultramarathoners. As a matter of fact, it's a technique that is studied and commonly practiced today by ultramarathoners. So he was just a 61-year-old potato farmer, sheep herder. He was used to running around their land. He grew up very poor. They couldn't afford horses. So when they had to herd up the sheep, corral the sheep, he had to run around and get them. So that's why he was so good at running. So what am I trying to say here by using this as my closing thoughts? So ladies and gentlemen, the Christian race, it's not about being the fastest. What it's about is laying aside every weight and every encumbrance that you're carrying with you. It's about running with endurance. Remember, pressing through all that agony. Putting it in low gear. Tipping your head forward and keep moving despite all the cost. And most importantly, keeping your eyes fixed on Jesus. That's where you'll find your comfort. That's where you'll find your strength. To those that run that race with those attributes, they will run across the finish line into the arms of Jesus and receive their prize. They'll hear the words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." So, this lesson has not been one that was specifically designed for invitation. However, if you do wish to make your life right with God, whether it's by baptism or seeking the help and support of the saints here, we're here for you, and I would invite you to come forward as we stand and sing our closing song.